Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, you know, this injury certainly challenges our depth in an area where, you know, we had some concerns already about our depth. So it's going to be important for certain players to step up and make the most of this opportunity. Clearly, somebody like Alec Mills is well positioned to capitalize on this opportunity and establish himself as a starting pitcher in this league. Colin Ray, who I think led the PCL in ERA last year and pitched really well, moves up the depth chart as well. Albert Azelay, who, when he's at his best, you know, is certainly ready to compete as a starter in this league, will have an opportunity to show that he's at the top of his game and fight for a role as well. So, yeah, and just being honest, you know, we had some concerns about our starting pitching depth, and now, you know, a freak injury further challenges us in that area, and we have to respond.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
And that was the unmistakable cadence of the Cubs president of baseball operations, Theo Epstein, earlier this week. This hour is being brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. I am Mark Grody, in here until noon, in for Dan Bernstein on the Dan Bernstein Show. Keep the text messages coming at 312-644-6767 if you want to play along. I'm also on Twitter, at Mark Grody Sports. You could do it like that, or you could jump in on Facebook or Instagram or however you like to do it social media-wise. Let's keep the Cubs conversation going now as we bring in Tim Stebbins from NBC Sports. Chicago. You can find him on Twitter at Tim_Stebbins, STEBBINS. What's going on, Tim?
Nothing much, man. Thanks for having me on today. How about you?
Absolutely. I am very well and enjoying talking about baseball because summer camp is in play on the north side, on the south side. Baseball is being practiced. There are baseball players stretching, hitting, throwing, doing what they do in spring training here during the summer. And Tim, I guess let's just start right there with what Theo Epstein was discussing. Jose Quintana is out, probably to start the regular season. So you have three different candidates in Alec Mills, Colin Ray, almost said Robbie Ray, Colin Ray and Albert Azelay. Who do you think best suits that fifth starter spot for the Cubs, if any?
I think it's going to be Alec Mills. I've been pretty confident in Alec Mills just from what he was doing last season. I think he was already kind of lined up to be in that swingman role in the original rotation plans, kind of like the role Chatwood had last year. Obviously, this kind of bumps him up one spot now. The interesting thing for me, though, is before Quintana's injury, David Ross was, you know, earlier this week, was pretty much saying, we don't really have any plans for a six-man rotation right now. And he even talked about some of the Cubs starters being, you know, a little bit ahead in their training where, you know, obviously early in the season, starting pitcher league-wide are going to be limited in how much they can throw. But he seemed confident maybe compared to the rest of the league, they were maybe a little bit ahead of some of the other teams. So with Quintana down, at the very least, you know, Quintana's kind of a controversial topic, I guess, among Cubs fans. He's an innings eater, though, and you're losing an innings eater, so I'd be interested to see now, does Colin Ray bump up into that six-man spot for an extended rotation?
Is there a role for Al's ally on this team because he was an interesting guy last year. A lot of excitement came up, and he had instant success out of the bullpen. And then as a starter, he kind of faded away and then found himself back in the minors, and we really haven't heard from Al's ally. What kind of a role do you think he has on the Cubs now and even going forward?
I think going forward, I think they would hope he can jump into the rotation next year. You know, you have Quintana coming off the books, Chatwood, and potentially Lester with that, you know, that kind of mutual option they have. But I think this year it would probably be kind of that stretch, you know, kind of flex role, kind of similar if he gets into the bullpen at all, like Colin Ray I was just talking about, because in spring training he was sent to minor league camp before everything got shut down. And obviously, we saw when they released their initial summer camp rosters last weekend, he was on the South Bend, you know, alternate site roster. So even yesterday when Theo Epstein was talking, you know, people were asking, what does this mean for Alzolay? And they wouldn't confirm or really commit to him on the spot being on the Wrigley training roster now. And that could change. They're probably just covering their bases, want to make sure they can figure everything out before making anything official. But that kind of spoke to me that I don't know if he's going to be necessarily an option for that fifth starter role. I think if he's on the roster this year, he'd be bullpen depth, and he'd be someone who can give you multiple innings in a really weird year for, you know, starting pitchers and, you know, innings limits and such.
It is important, too. I'm glad that you mentioned that when we last saw these guys, when it was actually spring training, that Alzolay had been sent to minor league camp, because we have to remind people of where these guys were back then. And one of those guys, where were they then, is Albert Almora Jr., who started off spring very well. It seemed like he had changed some things in his approach at the plate and his stance. You have Almora, you have Happ out there. It feels like it's last call for Albert Almora Jr. Do you think they're going to push the issue with Almora, as in, like, kind of really let him go? Or do you look at a platoon situation with Happ and Almora?
I think the DH really helps both of them. I think Happ was probably going to be in favor for that starting job in center field. But with the DH, there's so many options now, right? You know, Kyle Schwarber's going to DH. It's not going to be an everyday thing, but on days he DHs, you could put Almora in center, put Ian Happ out in left. And even other days, maybe you decide to move Happ around. Maybe you keep him in left and Schwarber's off or something, and Almora starts. So I think there's not going to necessarily be a platoon system. I do think Happ's probably above him if there was, you know, if you're looking at a depth chart. But I think the DH definitely opens up playing time for Almora this year, as well, really, with Steven Souza. Steven Souza is kind of an interesting case coming off that gruesome knee injury. He was somebody that, when you looked at the Cubs' depth chart in their outfield, you know, left to right, Schwarber, some combination, half Almora, and then Hayward. But now with this DH role, you can get Souza at bats, too. And obviously, he'll see time in right field with Jason Hayward, if need be, in kind of a split situation, lefty versus righty. So the DH definitely helps the Cubs in that regard, and it helps Almora for sure.
Glad you mentioned Steven Souza, because he's one of these guys who, when he first came up with Tampa Bay, or at least that's where I saw him when I was with the Cubs on the road, and like thinking, wow, that looks like a rising star type of guy. And he's obviously been derailed by injuries, but I think he is, for some team, and maybe this year for the Cubs, if he could stay healthy, Steven Souza Jr. still has a chance, I think, to be a really good ball player for a lot of years. What do you think? Is he capable of staying healthy and being eventually an everyday player in his career, do you think?
I think, you know, we see in baseball a lot, maybe this is kind of a cop-out answer, but how many players – maybe it's a dumb answer. How many players are everyday players, right? I think he can definitely be a key contributor on a team. Just, you know, 2017, he had a 3.8 war, right? So he wasn't somebody who was just kind of a typical role player, like you were saying. He looked like somebody who definitely was a contributor. He had 30 home runs that year. So I don't think, you know, maybe this year the Cubs are definitely going to play it safe with him. In kind of spring training, they were doing that where he can play around the outfield, but they were kind of limiting him early on and not just throwing him out into center field where you have to cover more ground. But if he's healthy, that'd be really interesting to see, because last year, Jason Hayward against lefties, he kind of struggled a little bit. Sousa's somebody who, for his career, is better against lefties than righties. So I think, you know, if he's healthy, which all signs in spring training pointed to that, he could be somebody who, you know, you get him off that bench and you really start mixing and matching your lineups if need be, and he could be somebody who helps you in that regard.
Yeah, I agree. He is 31, so I guess that probably takes away a little bit from, like, when I think about his ceiling and his upside going forward. I actually thought he was still in his late 20s, but he is 31 years old. All right, let's get on to the Cubs bullpen, and I guess the number one guy I have to ask you about is Craig Kimbrel, and nobody really knows where he is and what he's going to be, but how important is it for Craig Kimbrel to be right this year, to be Craig Kimbrel?
Yeah, it's immensely important. I mean, you have a 60-game season. We all know that, and each game is comparatively to a 162-game season worth about, you know, almost three times as much. So Craig Kimbrel, last year, he had the weird spring training, and what is happening this year? He has another kind of weird spring training. Obviously, he had the time in March to start off with. In the shortened season, though, and this kind of goes for the whole Cubs bullpen, but obviously you start with the closer who last year kind of struggled. You can't be blowing late games or late leads this year of all years, because a five-game losing streak or a couple bad games from the bullpen. We saw last year against St. Louis, Craig Kimbrel in that late Cardinals series late in September gave up a couple games late. And think about how that would affect the Cubs this year, right? So it's definitely important. It's immensely important for him to get back on track. And in a Cubs bullpen that lost three setup men who were, you know, often used, Stroke, Kinsler, Cishek, you don't really know what you have there yet. And you don't have the time as a normal season would offer you to figure it out. And that's going to be interesting to see how, you know, David Ross, our first year manager, is able to figure that out in such a short time period. So all around, it goes back to Kimbrel, where if he struggles, you have these other question marks, especially in a shortened season, and that could be catastrophic if he kind of stays on that path that he was last year. And I do believe he can bounce back, though. I should say that, because in late July last year, around that time, he was starting to settle in before he suffered a couple injuries. So he got into a groove, and the injuries really disrupted that. So I'd be interested to see that. I think he's someone who can bounce back, but if not, you got to watch out for sure.
Talking to Tim Stebbins of NBC Sports Chicago, I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. If Kimbrel doesn't bounce back, who's next man up? Is it Wick? Is it Jeffress? Which one of those two guys do you think gets first crack at the ninth inning if it goes badly for Kimbrel?
I would say Jeffress. I think you're going to want to keep Wick in that bridge role. And he was even someone who in spring training, he was figuring out, you know, new pitches in Arsenal, so you don't really take it for much. But he was kind of getting hit around a little bit. But I think they're going to want to keep him in that setup role. And Jeffress is someone who's closed before. So in my mind, he'd be first up. And last year, he was someone who dealt with injuries. So if he's healthy, maybe he's a bounce-back candidate too.
Who do you want to see play second base?
Everybody? That's a good yeah. And last year showed that maybe everybody is a tough option. I would like to see Miko Horner get a crack at it. But I imagine what I think is going to happen is it's going to be Kipnis to start. And I think if Kipnis comes out of the gate and plays well, that would answer a big question for the Cubs, where they could kind of pick their spots with Miko Horner, because with the minor league season canceled, he's going to be on the roster this year. So it's kind of about, he's played 20 big league games. You don't want to just throw him into the fire unless he proves he can handle it, obviously. But if you're able to pick your spots with him, I think that would definitely be helpful for his progression. And if Kipnis is able to, you know, kind of carry that load over there, that would definitely help too. I'd like to see Miko Horner just because what I saw last year, he seems like someone getting more playing time, kind of figuring out the big league scene. You know, he could be a key contributor. He could be someone who eventually is, you know, your leadoff hitter potentially. But I think, and at least initially, Kipnis is going to get a bulk of the starts over there. And maybe you figure out as you go on and kind of mix and match them a little bit.
Yeah, I'd definitely be interested to see what Kipnis has, because he's not that. I mean, it feels like he's been around forever. He's 32. I think that if he could stay healthy, that's a big, you know, shot in the arm right there at second base. But we definitely shall see. How you mentioned David Ross, and we really haven't really talked about him much in this conversation. Do you think this is a seriously difficult situation that he's being put in, considering the uniqueness of this season? Or do you think he's somebody who would be built to handle a situation like this?
I think that's a million-dollar question, right? It's the Cubs seemed to think he can handle it. You know, in a press conference earlier this week, Jed Hoyer was really speaking highly of David Ross and how he went about, you know, preparing for this season when – At the time, really, there wasn't a certainty that there was going to be a season. They said that he had a simulated season with the Cubs R&D department, where he was, you know, playing a season as a manager for these games just to stay ready. So I think that speaks to his work ethic and you know, what he's all about. But at the end of the day, as a rookie manager, there's still some manager, you know, there's still some part of it that requires the experience. And like I said, the bullpen earlier, that's one thing. He doesn't really have the time to figure out the pecking order for that. Or, you know, the lineup seems pretty set. But at the end of the day, too, it might be something that he might be someone who can definitely handle this. But in this weird season, it might not matter who you are. You might have injuries. You might have, God forbid, players testing positive for the coronavirus, where all these different factors are going to be thrown at you, because this season is so unique that it might not matter who you are. It might just be a challenge regardless.
Tim, great stuff. Thanks for coming on with me, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Yeah, appreciate having me on.
You got it, man. That is Tim Stebbins, NBC Sports Chicago. Again, you can find Tim on Twitter, @Tim_Stebbins. Got a text here. 312-644-6767. What about Happ at second, Schwarber in left, Almora in center? No, no, and yes. Happ, I think the days of Happ playing on the dirt are over. You look, no matter what kind of improvements we saw Kyle Schwarber make in left field, he is still better off not being out in left field, and he should be your primary designated hitter. You don't need to overcomplicate that. Yes, you can give lots of guys a rest on certain days. Anybody is capable of being a designated hitter, but I think that the primary guy in this case is Schwarber. You do not need to overcomplicate that. Yeah, anytime you can get Albert Almora Jr. playing center field, whether it is to start or late in a game, he is still a terrific outfielder. I think this is the last call for Albert Almora Jr., and he was playing well in spring training. Take that for what it is, and things had changed with his approach and his stance. They had made adjustments with him. We'll see if that carries over to the season, but you definitely get the feeling. It feels like it's Ian Happ's position, you know, with being a switch hitter and a competent outfielder. It feels like it's Happ there. Yeah, I don't think, you know, that was when you had Joe Maddon here. Joe Maddon was willing, as we know, to try people ever. I think Happ even played some third base a couple times, but and he was fine at second base. I'm just, if you're asking me, I don't think you're going to see Happ at second base a lot, especially considering they have Kipnis and Descalso and Bodie and Nico Horner that are all capable of playing that position better than Ian Happ would be. From the 630, hey Grody, any bowling updates from ISU's own bowling monkey? What am I missing there? Is that something from my old days at ISU, or is that going on now? I don't know. From the 260, Soler, 48 bombs last year with KC. Wow. Yeah, he did have 48 bombs. I remember when Soler was here with the Cubs, and it was when Schwarber went down, and I was doing pre and post, and we were on the field before, and we found out that horrible news about Schwarber being out for the rest of the season in 2016. And I asked Soler, hey, man, are you capable of stepping up and hitting 40 home runs? And I just remember reporters kind of looking at me like, what are you, crazy? He's not going to hit 40 home runs. How about 48 bombs for Jorge Soler last year? He's got the muscle, man. There's no doubt. From the 815, I don't understand why people can't figure out that Redskins was used as a derogatory insult, hence it's a racist name. Yep, plain and simple. Again, the Washington having internal meetings, they are going to change that name. That will happen. The NFL has come out with a statement supporting that. Daniel Snyder, sounding like he is finally down with it because everybody wants it done. So I guarantee you that will happen. I think it would happen this year. I don't know what all the logistics are in terms of changing merchandise. Is it too late to do it this year? I don't know, but I got a feeling that it is going down. All right, coming up here, we have a Bears segment, and I have a Where Are They Now 2020 segment. Let's talk about the Bears next, and specifically Roquan Smith and Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn. We will get some serious evaluations on those three Bears players. That's next, the final segment of the show. You have to be here for it because I put a lot of damn work into it. It's the Where Are They Now 2020 version of Major League Baseball. I'm Mark Grody, in for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously. But shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Like, I know, I think Roe made the, I want to say he said chip on his shoulder. And I feel that. I think he has that. Because, you know, the thing is, Roe played some really good football last year. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle. He had some excellent games. And I think that the big thing this year is just going to be we got to make that consistent, and we got to have that be every game. I think we all know that. But this is going into his third year. This is a big year for him. He knows that. And I think it doesn't – I think it takes at the linebacker position, I do feel like there's a gradual level where he's getting better. And I think going into year three, he's going to have a chance to have a breakout year this year. But he has been – outstanding this offseason. I think he's been phenomenal physically with his rehab and mentally with me. I'm very proud of him, and I'm really excited about the direction he's going.
Yeah, we've heard all the right things from Roquan Smith so far this offseason, and from that man right there. That is the Bears inside linebackers coach, the affable Mark DeLeon. And it is their jobs, the position coaches, to say glowing things about their players. And Roquan Smith last year played in and started 12 games. And this is Mark Grody, by the way, on the Score, filling in for Dan Bernstein. Roquan, last year, 66 solo tackles, 101 combined tackles. He had five TFL, five tackles for loss. He had a couple of quarterback sacks, also two quarterback hits. Pretty good numbers. And comparable to his rookie season, in which he played all 16 games. All the memory came in last second, and first play from scrimmage is a sack in Green Bay. But I didn't feel it was great for Roquan Smith last year. The eye test, which I think in this case is real, showed that he didn't seem to take the big jump, at least, that a lot of people thought he would between year one and year two. I mean, year one showed that, oh my God, this guy looks like he might be a star. So let's get technical now. Here is Sam Munson, the lead analyst of Pro Football Focus. He was on the McNeil and Parkin show on The Score this past week. Here's what he saw on tape from Roquan Smith in 2019.
Probably somewhere in the middle. I think Roquan Smith was a guy that we absolutely loved coming out as a prospect. I was, you know, so excited looking at his college tape and particularly how good he was in coverage and the way that the modern game has gone and just how important that is for linebackers, that's the area you need to be great at. And we haven't really seen that from him in the NFL yet. He, you know, he's still athletic. He still flashes the ability to make plays. He certainly is active. You know, he gets in on a lot of tackles. He's around the ball a lot. But we just haven't seen the same level of impact plays that we saw in his college career that made us so excited.
Had a very nice first year, Sam, after almost no training camp because of a contract holdout. But some slippage last year, some of it related to off the field, and he kept it to himself, whatever it was. Have you been able to pick anything up about what might have pulled Roquan Smith away from football for a short period of time, or what other things were bothering him last year that precluded him from enjoying the same season he did as a first-year player?
No, I'm not sure what it was, but you're right. It certainly affected him in a significant way. His second year was not nearly as good as his rookie season, and it manifested itself across the board, but in particular, again, in coverage, the area that we were so excited about heading into the NFL, it dove off a cliff in terms of performance. He had maybe two or three games last season that were even average when it came to PFF's coverage grade. His numbers across the board, when you look at the sort of predictive stuff and the stable metrics that we track that predict future performance, he really wasn't better than average in any area. And that was like, that's a big concern. I mean, the good news is, as you said, that his rookie season was better. So we at least saw, you know, a higher ceiling than we saw from him last year. So there's at least some hope that he could turn it around in year three, take that big step forward.
How did Roquan Smith fare versus other Bears linebackers in terms of how he graded out in coverage against his own teammates at linebacker?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question because you're right. A lot of the times, you know, scheme affects these things and players should be at least for initially compared against guys on their own team. Last season, you know, Nick Kwiatkowski was their best linebacker and their best linebacker in coverage. I think he had a significantly better coverage grade than Roquan, but really it wasn't a group that had great coverage grades. You know, Danny Trevathan's grade was kind of down where Roquan Smith's was as well. Kevin Pierre-Louis obviously played significantly fewer snaps, but he had a really good coverage grade. But that's not one that I would lean on given how little he was playing compared to the other guys.
So there's Sam Munson of Pro Football Focus discussing Roquan Smith. So Roquan Smith, 2018, 16 games, 89 solo tackles, 121 combined tackles, 5 sacks, 8 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hits. So, yeah, there obviously were some personal issues with Roquan Smith last year, the pectoral injury towards the end. There, it feels like there were legitimate reasons why maybe there was some inconsistency in his game last year. But yeah, Roquan, as you heard with Mark DeLeon talking about him, Roquan sounding determined himself. He looks good. He's been in Chicago most of this offseason rehabbing at Hallis Hall, working by himself with the trainers and trying to get that pectoral muscle right. I don't know if he is 100%. That we're going to have to wait and see. I know he says he feels he is, but he kind of admits, like, look, that's up to the doctors to decide how hard he can go right away. I assume he would be ready for the second week in September. All right, let's move on to Khalil Mack entering his 7th year in the NFL. And we know that the quarterback sack numbers went down last year for Mack. Here's what Munson says about Mack's sack numbers going down.
His sack numbers obviously dropped down, but his pressure numbers didn't really. I mean, his grade was worse than it's been any year of his career, really. I think that was the lowest grade of his career, slightly worse than his rookie season. But we're talking about, you know, a guy that was perennially above 90 in terms of PFF grades, the true elite numbers, you know, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, if not the best. And then he drops down a little bit. So I think he still was an extremely impressive pass rusher. We saw 70 total pressures from him. That was actually a couple more than the year before, albeit, you know, he missed time, obviously, in 2018. It's down from his very best play, but it certainly wasn't bad. You know, I think Khalil Mack was still a very good player last year. Just the guy was coming from, you know, a peak of being the best edge rusher in the NFL, a true game changer and a true dominant force when it comes to, you know, force fumbles and strip sacks and all those kinds of things.
Again, that is Monson on Mack. Mack last year, 16 games, 8.5 sacks, 14 quarterback hits, 8 tackles for loss. Compared to 2018, 14 games, 12.5 sacks, 18 quarterback hits, and 10 tackles for loss. So, you know, and I'm not worried about Khalil Mack. I'm really not. I mean, I enjoyed the breakdown right there and the realness of it, but I'm sorry. I do think that Mack returns to being what he was in 2018 and what he's been for his entire career. And he does have that sense of wanting personal greatness, which is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean he's not a team guy, but he is one of those guys who has a chance to be and wants to be considered one of the greatest of all time at his position. And I've also sensed from everything I've heard from the Bears and even in Zoom calls that he's not happy, as in he's pissed off about the way things went last year with his personal goals and with the team because they were a 500 team. So I'm looking very forward to seeing what he looks like. I think some of this too comes down to the defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano, putting these guys in the right spot. You don't necessarily want to see Mack in coverage a lot. Dial up more blitzes for Roquan Smith. Keep Eddie Jackson free, as in the free safety, and not have him come up to the box as much and not have to make as many tackles. Hopefully, Tashaun Gipson accepts that role a little bit more. And, yeah, it was his first year, Chuck Pagano, last year. And I'm sure Pagano learned some things and saw some things that he liked and didn't like that he will make adjustments. And I think it's really important for him to do that because you do, again, you have stars and all pros and pro bowlers all in this defense, and you got to make that work, and that's why the bar has to be set high for the Bears this year. All right, on to Robert Quinn, one of the newest potentially impact guys on the Bears defense. Sam Monson, on how he's an upgrade from Leonard Floyd.
I think he should be a significant upgrade. It depends a lot how they deploy him, because Robert Quinn is one of those players that, you know, generally speaking, there isn't much difference between 4-3 and 3-4. It's just the same alignment, but with a slightly different stance on the end. You know, one guy's going to stand up and one guy's going to put his hand in the ground, but generally they're in exactly the same alignment along the defensive front. But there are some players that need that three-point stance to be able to burst off the line of scrimmage and win with speed to the edge. And Robert Quinn is one of those guys, and he's bounced between 3-4 and 4-3 schemes, and when he's had to stand up on the edge, he just isn't the same player. He doesn't have the same get-off and can't threaten the edge the way he does when he's able to explode off the line from a three-point stance. So if the Bears are going to let him do that, they're going to let him line up with his hand in the ground every single snap and rush the passer, I think he'll be a significant upgrade. If they want him to line up in the two-point stance and play the same kind of role that Leonard Floyd did, I don't know that he'll be much better, because I think he's significantly worse at that than he is at the things he's good at.
Do what you do best. That makes a lot of sense to me. Entering his 10th year in the league for Robert Quinn, he was with Dallas last year, played in 14 games, 11.5 sacks, 22 quarterback hits, 13 tackles for loss. It was, though, and you can look at this in two different ways. It was his first double-digit sack year since 2014. So you're like, you hope he doesn't regress to what he was the year before last year. But you could also say, okay, well, he's back on the upswing again. Dallas was a good defense to be a part of, and the Bears presumably will be a good defense to be a part of. So he's really a perfect player for the system the Bears run in the 3-4, and saying, hey, your job is to get to the quarterback and knock him down. Yes, we want you to be in on tackles and be good against the run, but similar to Khalil Mack, we would like you to focus, number one, on knocking down that quarterback whenever possible. And Leonard Floyd was a different type of player. Like, he didn't get to the quarterback enough, but he was different in that he had the speed to play in coverage. He had the speed to get to running backs. He was a different type of guy. I mean, we knew from the second that he was drafted that he was a hybrid type of guy whose athleticism was at a 10. He needed to gain weight in order to break through the line to get to the quarterback, but Quinn has all that. He's got the muscle to break through, and I think that from the beginning, you don't have to adjust to him as a player like you did Floyd, where you could just say, yes, your job is to go get that quarterback, and I do believe that's what he will be capable of doing. 312-644-6767 is my number here if you want to call or if you would like to text. I would appreciate that. From the 773, Mark, thanks in advance for talking about the new teams for various MLB players. Too many local hosts think our interests are limited to Cubs Sox. Well, I mean, Cub Sox is what we will do 95% of the time. And I'm going to get, you know what, we're going to do this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I have compiled a list of players, many former Cubs and Sox, actually, of where they are now, where the stars are now in Major League Baseball, where some of the mid-level guys are, all familiar names, names that popped off the page to me because it's always a shuffle and it's always takes a little work at the beginning of the season getting used to where everybody is now. And I want to be your guide for that. I want to be your guide to let you know where everybody is in Major League Baseball. We're going to do that next here. Mark Grody in for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Terrio lifts to deep center. Hairston back on the warning track. Gone! Back to back.
Over an hour, and that pitch is hit to deep center field. And Lofton goes back to the track, to the wall, makes a leap, and that ball will fly away. So Mike Cameron deposits one over the center field fence. And Big John Roush is being rocked, and he's asking for Mark Johnson, his catcher, to come out and meet with him.
I'm assuming that was Mike Cameron's four home run day when he was with Seattle against the White Sox at what was then U.S. Cellular Field, I think. Yeah, unless it was New Comiskey. But yeah, that happened. And Ryan Terrio, I have no idea where the riot is these days. Is he even playing? I don't think so. I don't think he's playing anymore. Mark Grody in for Dan Bernstein here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Hub and Arthur Arkish. The Arkish is coming up at noon. They will be with you until 5 o'clock, and then we are going to roll out Game 7 of the 2016 World Series, Cubs and Indians. That'll happen at 5 o'clock here on The Score. Every baseball season, names pop up on teams, and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot he had signed there. You're like, oh, he's there now. I gotcha. So over the last couple days, I have been scouring. I'm not kidding. I went through all of the baseball rosters, every single one of them, looked at depth charts, looked at names, and names that looked familiar to me, names that popped up, star names, middle-level names, guys that I thought were pertinent that you might like to know where they are now. So here we go. Not really in any particular order. Here is where certain guys are now that you might be interested in. Carl Edwards Jr. Speaking of Game 7 of the World Series in 2016. Remember, he came out there for the ninth inning. He is now with the Seattle Mariners. Cole Hamels. He is with the Atlanta Braves. 1 year, $18 million deal. Add that to Max Fried and Sean Newcomb and Mike Fultonevich. Pretty good. Avisail Garcia. Remember him, White Sox fans? I know you do. Hasn't been that long. Milwaukee. He's with the Brewers. 2 year, $20 million deal. Nick Castellanos with the Cincinnati Reds. Oh, yeah. Add that to Votto and Eugenio Suarez. By the way, I think Eugenio Suarez, MVP this year. Just predicting. Wink. Madison Bumgarner. No D. Madison Bumgarner, he is with Arizona. Remember, 5 years, $85 million. Josh Donaldson, Sox, you're going to have to deal with him a whole lot this year. 40 games against your division this year. Josh Donaldson, Minnesota, and you also add that to 307 homers last year for the Twins. Donaldson with Minnesota. Travis Shaw, remember Travis Shaw? 31 homers and 32 homers for Milwaukee in 17 and 18. Travis Shaw now with the Toronto Blue Jays. Anthony Rendon, Angels, 7 years, $245 million. Where is Marcell Ozuna these days? Marcel is with the Atlanta Braves. 1 year, $18 million. Oh, Starlin Castro, where are you these days? Are you with the No. Starlin Castro signed a 2 year, $12 million deal to play with the Washington Nationals. Marcus Stroman with the New York Mets, making that suddenly a formidable pitching staff. Stroman with the Mets. Brandon Kinsler, not with the Cubs anymore. Where are you, Brandon? Brandon Kinsler is the Miami Marlins closer now. Mookie Betts with the Dodgers. Hector Rondon is no longer with the Cubs, no longer with the Astros. Hector Rondon, Arizona Diamondbacks. Corey Kluber, yes, he finally is gone from the Cleveland Indians. He's with the Rangers. The two-time Cy Young Award winner, Corey Kluber, is with the Rangers. Yomer Sanchez is with San Francisco. Tommy Pham of St. Louis Cardinals fame back in the day. Padres. What's up, Pham? Rich Hill is with the Minnesota Twins. And Rich Hill is finally something I feel like he should have been for the last 5 years. Rich Hill is finally 40 years old, but he is still playing. Rich Hill is signed, locked, and loaded to go with the Minnesota Twins this year. Kyle Gibson with the Rangers, kind of significant because he did spend a long time with the Twins, 7 years with the Twins, a former first-round pick, and the Twins finally did say, no mas, we give up, and Kyle Gibson now with the Rangers. Gerrit Cole, New York Yankees, 9 years, $324 million. Tanner Roark, local kid, south suburbs, right? Used to be with Washington, now with the Toronto Blue Jays. Tanner Roark. Julio Tehran, Angels. Taiwan Walker, back with the Mariners after 3 years in Arizona. Eric Thames, something of a of an older phenom with Milwaukee for 3 years. Remember the 31 homers in 2017. So not really a phenom because he'd been playing overseas and then he came back and I was like, who's this Thames guy thumping? Eric Thames now with the Washington Nationals. Rick Porcello. And this is what part of what makes you Stroman with the Mets. Porcello with the Mets. Porcello, the 2016 Cy Young Award winner with Boston. Francisco Liriano, still pitching. Who's he with now? Phillies. You know him from such places as the Twins and White Sox. Jesus Aguilar, former Brewer for a few years when Cubs and Brewers were hot, still are. Jesus Aguilar with the Marlins now. Justin Smoke is in Milwaukee. A lot of years in Toronto and Seattle, and Smoke is out. He's in the National League. Jared Dyson, the speedy Jared Dyson, who you know mostly from the Royals and was with Seattle and Arizona. Jared Dyson is in the Cubs division now. He is with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Chase Anderson, he is with the Toronto Blue Jays, had been with the Brewers and Diamondbacks. Didi Gregorius, no place for you with the Yankees anymore, and he is now with the Philadelphia Phillies. How about Mike Moustakas, who had a really good year last year with the Milwaukee Brewers? You can find Mike Moustakas now with the Cincinnati Reds. You have David Price with the Dodgers now. Remember, the Red Sox traded Price, Mookie Betts, and Cash to the Dodgers for Alex Verdugo, Connor Wong, and Jeter Downs. Starling Marte. He is now with Arizona, traded after 8 years in Pittsburgh. Remember, he was busted for steroids, but really was part of a really terrific core with Pittsburgh, which has kind of been broken up, and they're kind of in a weird state of mind and state of franchise right now. Trevor Cahill, all of a sudden, one of those guys who's been around forever. He loves being on the West Coast. He's in San Francisco. Neil Walker. He is with the Philadelphia Phillies. Corey Dickerson, Marlins. Logan Morrison, Milwaukee. At one point, an up-and-comer. He's still around, and the Brewers taking a flyer on him. Billy Hamilton, forever with the Reds. He will now steal bases for the San Francisco Giants. A few more here. Jonathan Villar, Marlins. He used to be really good. He was a guy that I thought would spend a lot of years with Milwaukee. Didn't really work out. Michael Wacha. The Mets. See? See what the Mets are doing, man? With their young core of position players, watch out for the – I hate saying that, but watch out for the Mets. Michael Wacha is with them. All right, a few other notes here. Albert Pujols, still in Anaheim, 39 years old, ninth year with the Angels. He's really just never been full Pujols since leaving St. Louis. Hell of a career, first ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt, but it feels like he got lost there. Andrew McCutchen and Jay Bruce, both in their second seasons with the Philadelphia Phillies. Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright, both still with the Cardinals, 37 and 38 years old. Yeah, man, they just keep coming back for more. Carlos Martinez, will he be? It looks like he's listed as the fifth starter with the St. Louis Cardinals. He had been in the bullpen. I think they're going to try to start him again. Hunter Pence, back with San Francisco, had been in Texas last year. And finally, my last note, Mike Montgomery, traded by the Cubs to the Royals last year, gets a full boat of what his wish is, why he kind of talked his way out of the Cubs. Mike Montgomery, a starter in Kansas City for a full season this year. So that, I hope that helps you. I'm sure there are guys that I missed, but from what I went through and from going through all of the rosters, that's what stood out to me in terms of where are they now in Major League Baseball. Speaking of Mike Montgomery, you get to hear him pitch today on The Score because he got the final out in Game 7 of the World Series in 2016 when the Cubs beat Cleveland 8-7 and 10. We will play that for you here on The Score at 5 o'clock. So don't be late because, you know, Dexter Fowler hits that home run on the fourth pitch from Corey Kluber. You're going to want to be there for that. And then you can actually sit back and enjoy the Rajay Davis two-run homer against Chapman in the eighth because it can't hurt you. You can't hurt me now, Rajay Davis. No, you can't. So never gets old. It's going to be 5 o'clock here on The Score, Game 7 of 2016 World Series. Coming up next, can't wait to listen to these two guys. It is Hub Arkish and Arthur Arkish. Those two guys will be on Noon to 5. You can expect a lot of NFL talk. I know they're having Scott Merkin on. And if you didn't hear, Michael Kopech not with the White Sox right now, dealing with some personal issues. So we'll get the latest on that from the Arkishes on Noon to 5. This has been an absolute blast today. Thanks to Sean Anderson and Christopher Dickens for helping put the show together. A couple of the guys they booked for us, Josh Nelson of Sox Machine. Thanks for coming on, Josh. If you want to check that out, that was at 10 o'clock. We did a full boat of Cubs talk with Tim Stebbins of NBC Sports Chicago at 11. So thank you to those two guys, to our producers, everybody who listened, everybody who called, and certainly thank you to all the texters. And I will go through all those texts here right now and see what is cooking there. Hub and Arthur are next. I'm Mark Grody. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 11 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Jerry Grody.
Put him in the Hall of Fame. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.